From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for June 23rd, 2023. Checking the calendar, the Brew Crew is on the road through the end of the month. We're right in the middle of the first weekend of Summerfest with Zach Brown Band tonight and James Taylor on Saturday. This weekend in Cedarburg, it's a Cedarburg Strawberry Fest. And for you voyeurs, the World Naked Bike Ride kicks off Saturday at 4 o'clock on Milwaukee's South Side. So there's a little something for everybody. Speaking of nudity, a man running for a seat in the town council on Long Island has an interesting campaign strategy. He stands buck naked all day behind the screen door of his house. He says he's keeping an eye on his campaign signs in the front yard. If he wins a seat on the council, he should be required to bring his own chair. And in another Chinese case, a man ended up in court after walking out on a blind date. He didn't walk out because she was unattractive. He walked because she brought along 23 of her relatives and expected him to pay for the whole gang. If this were the NFL, they would throw a penalty flag for too many players on the field. And finally, in South Korea, you can now buy gold bars from a vending machine. That's right. GS Retail has 29 vending locations, and in the last 9 months, they've racked up $19 million in sales of gold. The best-selling gold bar, of course, is the smallest one. It weighs 13 one-hundredths of an ounce, and it can be yours for $225. In case you're wondering, that's 900 quarters. On the podcast today, we have Dave Sandstrom, Adam Bailey, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. Hopefully, we all brought our quarters so we can get our gold bars. NASDAQ down 1.4% this week, a few quarters, closing at the bell at 13,493. The S&P down 1.4%, closing at the bell at 43,48. And that Dow Jones Industrial Average down 1.7%, closing at 33,729 for the year. The Dow up 2.9% despite the rough week, still a positive number. The S&P up 14.2%, and the NASDAQ a pretty stellar 29.5% still. You know, Dave, I think as we look at the week, tough to give back some of the gains, a lot of noise, not a lot of actual data. We've got a reconstitution of the Russell Indexes that takes place the fourth Friday of every June. And that adds to volume, it adds to the potential for volatility, so a big day today, but not really because of any underlying fundamentals, and it almost feels like we gave a little back despite nothing changing. Sometimes that's a healthy thing.
Well, I mean, it could simply just be profit-taking, Kyle. I mean, we had a pretty good run-up ever since the debt ceiling deal went through. Everybody breathed a big sigh of relief following that. We got some pretty good news on the tech side of things from some, you know, big boost from artificial intelligence. So we had a really nice run there. So I don't know if you can misconstrue this, you know, beyond maybe some profit taking. And you know, obviously there's little bits of noise in between there with some Fed speak and maybe a little bit of an uptick in some predictions on global recessions and things like that. But I don't think there's anything that was particularly unusual this week.
You know, I guess the way I viewed the market action this week is you got to pause and catch your breath. It feels like we've been on a sprint since last October, and we've had so many up weeks and up months. I mean, at some point, you got to have a down week here or there. And part of the catching the breath is looking ahead at what's going to come, because there, I don't want to steal the thunder, Joel, here, but there wasn't much in the way of economic news this week. A little bit. And there's nothing in the way of earnings. We're all kind of waiting for earnings season to restart. So we got to just pause and catch our breath once in a while after sprinting so far so long. And I think that's kind of what the market did this week.
Yeah, and I think maybe the one thing we did get this week that was a informational or instructional piece of news was the conversation that Jay Powell had, kind of talking about what the path forward looks like. You've got a lot of people, I think, guessing at what that is. The Fed's path is clearly a little bit different than what the market as a whole has believed. But, Dave, if nothing else, we're closer to the end than the beginning.
Correct. I think if that's one thing we can take from some of his comments this year, this is one of the first times that he really talked about the end, right? Specifically saying, you know what, maybe there's just a couple left and our job might be done. And so we haven't really quite seen that yet. You know, it's really hard to point at that finish line from the standpoint of when inflation does actually get to the target. But keep in mind that some of the more stubborn pieces of the inflation puzzle right now are those that have a tendency to lag the most, housing being and shelter being one, particularly difficult to measure. The way a lot of the calculations are done, it's you're looking at prior year averages, so you don't quite get your finger on exactly what's happening at the moment. So that makes it a little tough for the Fed. And so this last 2% to get from 4% where we currently were or currently are to get to their 2% target, it's a little bit some guesswork in there.
You know, one of the things that the Federal Reserve is cognizant of is that there's a significant lag between when they start acting and when it starts to really materialize in the economy. And by their own research, that's somewhere between 12 to 18 months from when they first start to act before we really feel the full force and effect of their monetary policy changes. And well, they started, 12, 18 months ago? So now we're really starting to see it materialize in the economy. All the more reason why they said, okay, well, maybe just this month we're going to pause, we're going to reassess, we're going to let the data roll in. Was it a skip? Was it a pause? I don't know. Maybe ask me later in the year, I'll tell you. But yeah, they're just waiting and reassessing as the data is rolling in. And you know what? The economic data is still pretty good. We're not maybe on the cusp of a recession that we were talking about earlier on this year. The economy is showing that it still has a fair amount of strength, as does the job market.
And Adam, I think a key to that is your 12 to 18 months is what usually happened. And I don't know that we had a usual, you know, circumstance in
good
which
point. Yeah.
The Fed was raising rates. So, you know, maybe we're going to see a longer leg. And I think, you know, maybe things like housing, Dave, aren't as sensitive to the higher interest rates as they normally would be. We've got, you know, we've seen this with a lot of the economic indicators, just sort of pent up spending and you know, the revenge spending, as they call it, of people who weren't able to buy things, or go places, do things during the pandemic, and now they're letting loose.
You know, I think one of the things we have to remember is that the Fed raised rates faster than they've raised them in 35 years. That we've been in these positions before, but this is one of the extremes. And so the response comes at a different pace. It comes in different ways. It isn't always the same. And yet, when we go back to the kind of meat of those rate increases, Adam, last year we saw a painful, painful year for bonds, the worst we've seen in maybe 100, depending on what you're looking at. All of a sudden, with Jay Powell and the Fed talking about, well, maybe we're not at the end, but we're close, we're not going to get another 500 basis points, another 5 percentage point increase from here. It's unlikely, it seems. Maybe paints a different picture for bonds than the one we were talking about 6 months, a year ago, in which, you know, that pace of hikes was a lot quicker.
It paints more of a picture of stability than it did last year. I mean, for one, where interest rates are likely going to be reasonably stable. We're not going to have that the pace of the interest rate increases like last year. Maybe we'll get one, if not two, this year, if that. So interest rates, the overnight rate, relatively stable this year. Inflation is starting to moderate. I mean, talk about the ultimate nemesis of bonds. Last year, inflation peaked at 9. Now we're in the 4%-ish range. There's a chance we could see something with like a 3% handle towards the end of this year. Are we going to get back to the 2% comfort zone by the end of this year? No, probably not, but maybe early next year. And you put those two things together, some stability in the overnight rate, some moderating inflation. That's the two big reasons why bonds have started to recover meaningfully this year and are starting to pay a lot more in the way of yield.
And I think it's important to understand, too, that interest rate component to your bond is so important. It provides you with that shock absorber to handle the price movements. You know, we just spent 10 years without a shock absorber, basically. And so that meant every move in interest rates, you felt it whether it be good or bad, it was an immediate reaction on the price of your bonds. So now that we're back to a point where we actually have some yield back in the bond market, that smooths the ride a little bit, and it gives you that opportunity to kind of, you know, stick with those bond positions and not feel the pain.
And not just in the bond market, but in the cash market as well. We're starting to see yields on money funds come back up. That's true more for like brokerage money markets than it is like bank money markets. But you can get in the neighborhood of a 4% interest rate on cash these days. I haven't been able to say that since 2004. Talk about a good shock absorber without the volatility.
Well, and Dave, I think one of the challenges that we have is that we've had a really strong run at a few small names. We're seeing some areas of the market, the risk-on areas of the market, that are starting to pop again, and there's this tendency to chase, right? That you see those returns, you don't want to miss out on what the next 6 months look like because the last 6 months were great. And so, hey, let's go get some more of that. And I think more and more, it's a reminder that, you know, you can get burned pretty bad chasing that asset class that has done well, that stock that has done well. The importance of, you know, having somebody you trust give you advice on how to stay diversified.
So are you telling me you're not doubling down on your NVIDIA positions? Is that the idea?
It's a great stock, and there's plenty of life in it, as with all those stocks kind of in the short list of stuff that rallied. But again, I think when you look at valuations, you start to understand why maybe some of the stuff that's still cheap makes sense.
Yeah, and you're bringing up a really valid point, Kyle, about why we're not going to start ignoring the value side of the portfolio, even though, you know, we've seen a huge discrepancy there between growth and value again this year. You know, part of it is the banking scare early on has suppressed value, I think, a little bit. Certainly some of these eye-popping earnings projections from the tech sector has made everybody pile into growth. But we can't forget the importance of that balance on the stock side of the portfolio and the fact that value stocks are there for a reason, and that's to provide you with a little bit of an anchor and a mooring as you go forward. You know, some of each is great, but don't give up on those value stocks at this point.
You can't abandon the value, in part because large value tends to represent some of the most stable businesses out there, the best balance sheets, the best cash flows, some of the most attractive dividends. And the tech side of the market, the growth side of the market, has come a long way in a very short period of time. Maybe that's an area that needs to pause and catch breath for a while. And if the market trades sideways, you're going to love having those dividends that roll in. And that's something more unique to value as opposed to growth. And you know what? The other side of the value market, between value and growth, is you know, value tends to be the cheaper side, where you're getting a bargain on the shares. Growth tends to be where you're overpaying in price. I guess I don't have to remind people that you always look smart buying a good business at a good price, and you find that on the value side of the market.
Joel, we got some housing data this week that was better than what we've seen in a little while. Certainly a positive, I think, sign that one area of the market that could be a meaningful concern at this point in the cycle is still showing signs of maybe a little bit of growth.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about before. I mean, you think that interest rates and mortgage rates particularly, you know, when those go up, that it's really going to affect housing. But we had numbers this week on housing starts and building permits and existing home sales. All of them are headed up, and they're not back to where they were a year ago, but some of the numbers are actually, you know, pretty good. And you don't go by 1 month's report, but that 1 month is sort of contrary to what we expected at this point. One thing that came out today was, or yesterday, was the leading economic indicators from the Conference Board, and it was interesting because they have an indicator that's basically for 14 months been saying, you know, we're about to hit a recession, and they revised their forecast to say that they don't now expect a recession in the second quarter of 2023, but they do expect one beginning in the third quarter up until the first quarter of 2024. So just another reminder that you know, all the doom and gloom that a lot of people were dispensing a year ago or you know, last fall, hasn't come to fruition yet.
Yeah, maybe one constant with respect to our expectations about the economy is that those expectations are changing. So as we kind of digest the data, we got initial claims for unemployment this week showing a little bit more weakness in the labor market, perhaps. But then when you look at things like continuing claims for unemployment insurance, still some signs that, yeah, even when more people are being laid off or more people are looking for work, they're finding it fairly quickly.
Yeah, the initial claims are now higher than they were just entering the pandemic. So, you know, we're back above that. But it's 30% below the 56-year average. So the job market is still pretty tight. And that, you know, the unemployment rate is around the lowest it's been for 50 years. So it's showing that that one part of our economy that helps feed consumer spending, which is so big to the rest of the economy, is still pretty strong, despite a couple of weeks now that those initial claims have been going up.
Well, 20 floors above Summerfest grounds on a Summerfest weekend is not always the best time to be trying to record a podcast. I think we got lucky today in that we weren't interrupted too much by the music. I think the second hardest set of days is Summerfest days. The hardest is always the air show when you've got the planes flying by. So stay tuned, because as we get into later in the summer, that air show will be kicking off and you'll be able to hear those planes testing out their acrobatics here. So we enjoy doing the program for you. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.